This is CliffCentral.com. Auto Central, powered by Auto Trader on CliffCentral.com.
Welcome to Auto Central, brought to you by Auto Trader, your trusted motoring marketplace. Full lineup today, and the usual suspects in studio. George, how you doing?
How's it, Doc?
Yeah, very good. Thank you. Very good. I see it's been a very, very busy 2 weeks. Excuse me, in the industry, and something really, really big coming out of in the news last week is the competition regulation for a growing and inclusive economy. And the Competition Commission of South Africa is conducting advocacy work in the automotive aftermarket industry and has gazetted a draft code of conduct for public comment. And basically what these guys are doing is there are intended outcomes for this commission code of conduct. They want to enable small and independent service providers owned by historically disadvantaged individuals to be able to provide auto body repairs and services and maintenance work on motor vehicles whilst the vehicles are still covered by warranties. They want to enable all service providers to be able to use freely purchased and use equal matching spare parts, and they want to enable previously disadvantaged individuals with the opportunity to own OEM car dealerships. So really a proposed code of conduct to, I think, expand the industry. And yeah, I think there's quite a bit of it's going to be a hot topic, I think.
Yeah, very simply, what this is trying to achieve is to allow the traditionally non-franchised car dealer to service a car under warranty.
Yeah.
And then for the OEM to still honor that warranty. Because if you can imagine, you take your car to, let's say it's a Toyota, to any Toyota dealership, and you have your car serviced at that Toyota dealership, or as a matter of fact, buy your car at that Toyota dealership, but you service it at another Toyota dealership.
Yeah.
The warranty and maintenance plan is still honored by the original equipment manufacturer, which is OEM for short.
Yeah.
And it's that particular thing that is being challenged in this code of conduct, so that independent service repair centers can service that car and it still remains under its maintenance
warranty. But surely that's going to be a big issue for some of the OEMs. I mean, if I go and buy a Toyota from, let's say, a reputable Toyota dealership, and I take my car, you know, on its 15,000 K service down to Bob's Automart, and he's going to, you know, he's going to work on the car, and I trust him, but is he approved by the manufacturer? Is he carrying the right kind of parts? Does he have the right kind of tooling equipment? Is it the same level of service that I'm going to get from a franchise? And I think the franchises, well, the OEMs and the dealerships are going to, I think they're going to kick up a stink about this, because I think they want to retain that business, don't they?
Yeah, of course they do. And, I think it depends on what the rules end up being, because you're right. An independent service center needs to jump through a bunch of hoops that is dictated by that original equipment manufacturer in order to for that OEM to still honor that warranty and maintenance plan.
Yep.
Because you know, if they don't have the right tooling and they don't have the right equipment and they don't have the right procedures, who's going to train their staff? If they don't do all that stuff, then why should the OEM still honor that warranty?
Exactly, 100%.
On that vehicle?
Yeah.
So I think it depends on the rules that get put in place and whether the OEM is going to be happy with those rules.
Because essentially the warranty ultimately ties you into that dealership, doesn't it? No,
it doesn't tie you into that dealership, because you can take your car to any dealership that is a franchise dealership that is endorsed by the OEM.
Yes, okay. But you can't take it down the road. So it's essentially they still retain the business once you've purchased that vehicle from them, the OEM.
The OEM, yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, the OEM doesn't retain the business. The OEMs, the dealership retains the business. Remember, in South Africa, the franchise dealers are independent from the OEMs.
Yeah.
They're not owned by the OEMs by and large, because that's not the way the country's model works.
Mm.
So therefore, the dealership itself is the one that profits from any services or any maintenance that gets done And then in the warranty and maintenance plan arena, passes that cost onto the OEM, who then funds it.
Yeah. So I mean, if we just, I mean, there is an article on autotrader.co.za, I mean, in our news and reviews section, with regards to this, and it really is a detailed article. And if I just want to go and unpack some of the points that have been discussed in the article. If you get to the point of, you know, many manufacturers sell their cars with a service or maintenance plan included in the retail price, and this kind of holds some advantage for the buyers because, you know, for the duration of that plan, servicing or maintenance needs are obviously taken care of. So that boils it down to kind of fixed cost motoring, which I think is far more appealing to the end user than, you know, variable cost motoring, where you don't know what you're in for at the end of every month or when you're going to have a service.
Yeah, I mean, let's just make a distinction between warranties and maintenance plans.
Yes.
So warranties is like the warranty on any product that you buy, whether it be an appliance or a phone or a, you know, a pair of headphones or whatever. That is the manufacturer's warranty, and it usually has a particular duration.
Yes.
And that duration then expires, and then after you bear the risk for any repairs that have to be done. A maintenance plan is separate from that. A maintenance plan is the servicing of the car, the wear and tear parts, the things that will go regularly, changing of oil, changing of spark plugs if the car still has spark plugs.
So anything that really has wear and tear.
Exactly. That is part of the service and maintenance plan.
That's right.
And then so all manufacturers have a warranty for a predetermined number of kilometers or a predetermined number of amount of time. But not all manufacturers have maintenance plans. A lot of them do nowadays. And you can elect not to take that maintenance plan if you so choose. So, and one affects the other.
Yes.
If you don't maintain that car at an OEM dealership, whether it's under a maintenance plan or not, your warranty then will come into jeopardy.
Okay. So I see that this code of conduct wants to force manufacturers and dealerships to drop the requirement that vehicles need to be serviced at the agents to preserve their warranties.
Well, that's the whole debate around not servicing it at a franchised dealership. But then the service centers that do service the vehicle have to be then, in my mind, endorsed by the OEM. The OEM is to say, yes, you have the right training, like
Correct.
You said earlier, you have the right tooling, you have the right skills in order to service this Toyota Corolla.
Yeah, so fully accredited kind of workshops that have been proved by the OEM.
Yeah. So I think that's going to be the hard part. And I think it can be done, and it's probably going to be done because it's happened all over the world.
Yeah. So one of the other things is, what is the issue with non-dealerships, so private or franchised workshops? And I think this goes down to, and like you rightfully said earlier, if you have your vehicle serviced at service center around the corner because it's a mate who owns it, but let's say he's not accredited and he's not putting the right parts in the car, what the bill is saying is that they still want the OEMs to honor the warranty on that vehicle. And I personally, I don't see how that's even viable or feasible. I mean, you know, these guys have set up businesses in South Africa. They've spent years building their brands. You go and buy a car now and you can get it serviced, you know, wherever you want, put wrong parts in it. But if something goes wrong, then they still want the OEM or the brand to honor the warranty of the vehicle.
Well, this is where I think the sticking point is going to come. The OEM still has to endorse each of those service centers.
100%.
If the OEM doesn't endorse each of those service centers, why should they honor the warranty?
Yeah, well, exactly. But this is what they're saying, and this is why the OEMs have a monopoly, which is what this code of conduct is trying to kind of break down, is that these guys don't have a monopoly in terms of, you know, you can only have your car serviced here. And they obviously want to extend the workforce, you know, and by giving other people an opportunity to you know, to service vehicles. But I think
it's less about a monopolistic intent. I don't think the OEMs have a monopolistic intent. It's more about you need to have the right tooling and the right skills in order to service the car that I made, in order for me to honor a future warranty.
Yeah,
it's less about the monopolistic intent. And I think both scenarios can play out if the OEM endorses the independent service center.
100%. So I mean, we're going to be creating work here. No doubt there's work.
Exactly.
I think it can work. They're obviously just going to have to sit around a table, and I mean, I don't think it's going to be signed overnight.
I think it's going to, it's going to be a huge debate. It definitely can work. My personal opinion is that it can't work unless the OEM endorses the service center.
Yes.
Just logically for me, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. So I mean, just part of the article here as well, it says, but it goes deeper than just the dealership monopolies, as this code of conduct will also require manufacturers to release proprietary information, including software and coding protocols, wiring diagrams, and technical manuals. So manufacturers obviously and justifiably object to such draconian infringements on their intellectual property rights, and they cannot reasonably be expected to essentially make all of the extensive research and developments available to all and sundry. Now, if we just go, and you've alluded to this in a lot of our tech segments, Tesla put their knowledge and resources out there in the open marketplace for people to use. So is this just a new way of thinking? Do you think these guys, you know, okay, cool, I've got this special machine that runs diagnostics on my Toyota. It makes sense that I can, A, sell that piece of equipment to a service center that then gets approved. I mean, we're in a day and age now where cars are becoming electric, and you know, all these fancy equipments, it's going to become
is a certain level of proprietary intellect and property that resides with the OEM, and we've got to be cognizant of that. There is a certain amount of proprietary information that they don't want out. A lot of money gets spent on research and development, and yes. And often companies make losses in that phase of research and development, and then in the future make profits. So personally, I am sensitive to the fact that there is proprietary information that shouldn't necessarily be freely available until that company has recouped its investment cost. However, on the flip side, there are ways to achieve what this code of conduct, I think, is setting out to achieve. And that is get the OEM involved. Because if the OEM's involved in those service centers being accredited and endorsed, then the amount of proprietary information and the way in which that is passed on to those service centers can be funneled.
Yeah.
And can be controlled by the OEM so that they don't get any proprietary information out into the wrong hands.
Yeah, so I think this is going to become a hot talking point within the industry, because this is obviously going to affect every single brand that we have in the country. And, you know, there are good points to it and there are bad points to it. You know, and the code of conduct is available. If you want to read up about what the actual code of conduct every single point to it, you can go and download it. But the commission has published this draft code of conduct, and I see they are they're asking for submissions from the general public and from industry to submit their concerns or suggestions. And deadlines for the submissions are the 3rd of November 2017. Right, on to the next subject. Nissan to suspend production for Japan market amid the inspection scandal. We spoke 2 weeks ago about these guys signing off vehicles once they've come off the production line, and these guys aren't actually qualified to do this. And I see they've completely, Nissan said on Thursday, was suspending all production destined for its local market in Japan. And we spoke about the 1.2 million vehicles that have already been recalled. That's quite a staggering number of vehicles. And I think quite a big decision to make to stop production in their local market.
Yeah, I think it's a massive decision to make. You don't just stop production. What are the alternative solutions?
Well, they're obviously going to have to get, you know, their staff accredited to approve those vehicles. But, you know, the Japanese never strike me as people that cut corners and do things incorrectly. They're quite astute. I don't know.
Well, we've got to refer to the airbag scenario.
Well, that's we can't
go and tar everybody with the same brush.
No,
but,
for sure.
But there is the scenario with the Tanaka airbags.
Yeah.
And them, you know, detonating unnaturally,
exactly. Yeah. So Nissan made it. Do you think we'll have that? I mean, there shouldn't be any kind of knock-on effect to South Africa. I mean, our Nissans are manufactured out at Roslyn, and I think we import from, well, we don't import from Japan, but.
Well, it depends on whether the assembly process is similar or not, and uses the same procedures. But I don't think so. It seems to be isolated.
To their local market. Yeah. Something really, really cool. And if you are interested in the car of the year, you could win one of 10 exclusive invites to attend the 2018 West Bank South African Car of the Year with Auto Trader. And our social team have got their hands on 10 tickets.
Brilliant.
And what's really cool is you really just got to follow our social media pages. You know, stay tuned. And you could join us on the night. And I must say, we were there last year. What a spectacular evening. Really, really nice. So if you are interested in entering, just follow our social media pages.
What's exciting for me at that evening and that event is I walk in there wondering where they've hidden the car.
Exactly. I mean, last year we didn't know.
We didn't know, yeah.
Well, I mean, if we just explain to the listeners. So it was held at Kyalami.
Yeah.
And they had this massive room. And in the middle of the room, it was a bar, essentially.
Yeah. It was a four-sided bar.
It was a four-sided bar with bottles and, you know, all the kind of booze.
If you look very closely, the bottles on the shelves were actually attached to the I think you pointed it out.
Well, we did notice, obviously, once it had lifted.
Yes.
But anyway, so this bar actually, when they announced the winner, this bar raised out of hoisted it into the roof, essentially. Yeah. And the Astra was revealed. So really, really nice. So, so all you need to do to win one of these 10 coveted invites, you'll need to keep your finger on the pulse by staying tuned to at Auto Trader SA on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And look out for the hashtag Westbank Coty 2018 hashtag. And don't forget to use it when you engage with us. Follow us on our social media channels, and you could join us on the night for a fun evening. I see last week in Pretoria, there wasn't a total road closure, but the city of Tshwane officials and other interested parties cycled in the streets of the inner city to encourage people to use environmentally friendly modes of transport. So this is obviously in line with Transport Month, and the city officials and residents joined in the ride, and they were scheduled to embark on a 5K kind of cycle from Tshwane House to Sisulu Street. So quite nice that, you know, the cities are cottoning on. I think my point here is, you know, we're still encouraging people to ride bikes, and I think it should be happening far quicker. I really do.
It should be happening far quicker. But before we can get to Car Free Friday,
yes,
we need to get to infrastructure built.
Well, completely.
So if you want to not take your car to work,
yeah.
You need to be able to get there in another way. And
yes.
I don't think those other ways exist except for the likes of Uber,
And if you live on a bus route or if you live on a bus route,
the Gautrain services or something. So I don't think that infrastructure is there to the degree that, London or New York or San Francisco has. But it's a brilliant initiative.
Yeah.
Not sure if it's practical, though.
I mean, we travel massive distances, and I don't think there's any kind of, besides the fact that you can, you know, probably put an extra 2 or 3 years onto your lifespan by riding a bicycle to work, are we incentivizing people in any way, shape, or form to use alternate modes of transport versus a motor car? And I don't think, you know, there are any other real benefits besides personal benefits for somebody who goes, you know what, I'm not going to take the car today. I'm going to ride my bicycle because, I don't know, I get a free Chelsea bun at the garage. I don't know. Like, you know what I'm saying? So how are we incentivizing people to get onto their to get onto bicycles? Are we putting bikes there for like bike sharing? I know there's bike sharing in Cape Town. It's slowly rolling out, but I think we're a couple of years behind, and I just don't think it's been driven hard enough. But then again, George, to your point, infrastructure. You can't go and ride your bicycle on a normal road because you are going to get hit.
Exactly.
Especially if you're not you've ridden in the road. I've ridden bikes before. You have to kind of be switched on. Got to have eyes in the back of your head. Otherwise, you could get taken out.
You could get taken out. And like you said right at the beginning, most South Africans travel far distances to work.
Yep.
So the practicality of actually riding a bike to work is hard to achieve.
Sure.
If you're doing 40-30 Ks to work, it's a tough thing to ride a bike for 30 Ks.
Yeah.
You got to be a proper cyclist to do that in a good amount of time. It's going to take you, it's going to take you a good 2 hours at least.
Mm. Yeah, and it's not like we live on the flattest country ever. I mean,
Joburg is generally known to be flat, it is undulating.
You just take a bicycle around Joburg and you realize how flat it actually is. I see Cape Town as well. The city council wants to see at least 8% of the city's workforce going to work on a bicycle by 2030. Again.
What percentage?
8%.
8%.
By 2032. Now, I mean, we know by 2040, there probably won't be a fossil fuel burning vehicle on the road. And we're still talking about getting guys to go to work on bicycles.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good initiative. And 8% is not a high number. If you think, what is Cape Town's population at? About 10, 11 million. And I don't know what the motoring population is down there, but 8% of that could be a big number, although the percentage is small.
Yeah. And look, if there's any city that can do it in South Africa, I know Cape Town have got it in them to do it. And I think the Cape Townians as people would embrace something like that, all green and healthy, and even though they don't have water. Sorry, guys. But cycling. I don't know. What are they going to have to drink? Energy or something on their bikes? Chelsea bun at the garage. Then I see here as well that engine failures tarnish Ford Focus RS Halo hatchback. There's been a number of incidents reported over the last couple of weeks about engine failures on the Ford Focus RS Halo hatch. There's an article again on our site. And speaking to some of the local RS owners who have had this problem, it appears that after a Ford rep has consulted with the dealers where the fault has been reported, the engines have been replaced. So Ford have obviously come to the party and they are replacing these faulty parts.
Well, these are cylinder head, gasket, and cylinder block issues,
yes.
Which, so if you know a little bit about engines, the cylinder block is where the pistons are, and then the cylinder head runs all the fuel injection and all of that stuff, and the two are held together by a bunch of bolts and a bit of a seal or gasket around the center, and that seems to be where the issue is. What's striking for me is that I haven't heard about these kinds of issues for many, many, many years.
Yeah, and it's almost like they're surfacing now. But I mean, some of these cars haven't even got 4,000 or 5,000 kilometers on them, and they're having these problems. So, is it a drive? Is it a picnic problem? So, problem in chair.
So what's interesting also is that this problem occurs on the EcoBoost, which is the turbocharged car. Now, in the beginning of turbochargers in the automotive world, this was a common problem. The boost into the engine, into the cylinder, was created more pressure inside that cylinder, which caused cylinder head gasket issues.
Yeah.
But over time, they sorted that out. A lot of manufacturers moved away from turbocharged engines because of the peripheral problems that the pressure caused, but then I think turbochargers started getting more efficient and eventually those issues were sorted out. So it's surprising that a similar issue to what happened at the beginning of turbochargers has resurfaced in this particular model.
Yeah.
I think what's more interesting is, and here's a nice stat: how many moving parts has a fossil fuel car got?
Oh, geez, look. I can't
it's
even
north
have a fly.
Of 2,000 moving parts fossil fuel car. So the end, the pistons and the turbo adds more moving parts to the car.
Yeah.
So there's 2,000 opportunities for something to go wrong. 2,000 opportunities. How many moving parts does an electric car have?
Probably a quarter of that.
Even less, 18.
Only 18?
18 moving parts.
Well, we're going to talk about something in the tech segment just now. There's and it's my vehicle of, just a love vehicle of mine, but we'll get into it.
You can see why electric vehicles will just stop this problem.
But, you know, George, going back to our earlier discussion around that code of conduct.
Yeah.
I just see here there's a Richards Bay owner, and I'm not going to mention his name. So he had his engine replaced, and it was had covered just over 4,000 kilometers, and he was satisfied and very, very happy. But he said that he got annoyed when he was told that he needed to pay for a clutch replacement, as this was a wear and tear item not covered under the standard Ford Focus RS4 year 120,000K warranty. Now, that is a problem. I mean, if you've only had your car and you've done 4,000 Ks in it and you've got these kind of issues, and then they tell you, oh no, you've got to now replace your clutch.
Mm.
I think this is the kind of stuff that, you know, that commission is trying to get rid of. Because the question I've asked myself is, are they telling him to replace the clutch to try and recoup some of the costs for the engine replacement? Now, I don't know if that's just me thinking like me or... You know,
So there's always three sides to the story, yours, mine, and the truth.
Yes.
So it's very hard to speculate on this particular issue. You know, clutches can go independent of that engine issue.
Yeah.
You know, I know a little bit about car engines, and I'm not sure that I see the connection between turbocharger blowing the head gasket and that connected to the clutch.
Yeah.
There seems to be a logical connection between the head gasket going and the clutch going.
But I see that it's not an isolated incident because it happened to another user as well in a different part of the country. So
it could be a totally separate incident that's not connected at all.
Yeah. So anyway, so yeah, just, you know, just interesting to see that, you know, these things still happen, which is why I think electric's going to just absolutely revolutionize absolutely everything.
Talking my language.
And then something that I really, really think is awesome because I've had children and George, you're going to get into this, but a new innovation in child car seats could reduce head and neck injuries in vehicle collision. A car seat manufacturer, Maxi Cozy, has today launched the first, well, not today, but last week, has launched the first forward-facing car seat with built-in airbags, which is really, really spectacular. And I had a look at the video. So basically, if you've ever put a child into a car seat, most of them are rear-facing. Mm. This one you can swing around and the child can sit forward. But basically, they've put two airbags on the straps that go over the child's chest that when it clips into the buckle. And as obviously, as soon as there's a jolt, these airbags deploy in under 0.5 seconds.
Oh,
and then,
wow.
And then they release their air after, I think it said three or four seconds.
Well, to absorb the energy,
absorbs the energy and then they deflate, which is really, really nice to know that you can, you know, keep your little ones safe. And nice to see that, you know, airbag technology has been put into children's car seats.
Yeah, I think that's brilliant. You know, but we've got a bigger problem in South Africa. And, you know, my wife, Kerry, she has a shit fit every time she sees this. And that is, we stop at a traffic light and... because I drive an SUV, you're quite high up, and there are kids romping around the inside of people's cars.
Yeah,
you know, and no technology is going to stop that child from being hurt in the face of an accident. So you know, so even with a built-in airbag car seat, it doesn't fix the problem that I think a lot of South Africans. The line they cross, and that is letting the kid stand between the two front seats, sit on your lap.
Yeah, well, I mean, a child in a front seat without a seatbelt on, A, can drive me up the wall. Like I will,
even in the back seat without a seatbelt on.
I've stopped my car and, you know, indicated to the driver, roll down your window, and just really, really nicely ask the question, are you going to be happy when that child flies through the windscreen? And I don't wish it upon you, but that's what could happen. But I think a lot of people drive with this, oh, it's not going to happen to me kind of attitude.
Exactly.
But if you take, look how long it took for us to start wearing seatbelts. I remember as a kid sitting in the back seat, I never had a seatbelt on. And even my parents, I mean, my dad today drives me absolutely up the wall because I get into the car and I have to say to him,
My parents are the same.
Can you put your seatbelt on, please? It's just not ingrained in them. Whereas it's ingrained in me, and it's obviously ingrained in my children. So,
So I think before we get to an airbag built-in car seat for kids, so we need to freaking just strap them in.
Exactly, 100%. So seatbelts first, people. If you're out there driving with children, please. Right, George, let's get on to our Formula One segment. Really, really exciting Grand Prix last week in the United States. And tell us what went down, please.
I was on the edge of my flipping seat. So firstly, on Saturday with the qualifying, Vettel had to get onto the front row of the grid, because if he didn't get onto the front row of the grid, that points gap was going to grow exponentially. And he managed to get second place on the grid, and on the start he passed Hamilton on the first corner, and he was absolutely flying. That Mercedes-Benz couldn't keep up. But the problem is that he was pushing it too hard, and his back tires started blistering and giving up. And because he was pushing too hard, and I think Hamilton was really strategic with this. He knew that because of the heat, that the tires may give issues, and eventually Vettel just couldn't keep the pace up, and Hamilton ended up passing him again. So a gap started being built, and eventually Vettel went into the pit, changed his tires, put on a new set of tires, and then started looking after them. Ended up second in the race, which is great. So the points gap has grown slightly.
Yep.
However, Raikkonen was third, and on the very, very last corner,
Max Verstappen
passed Raikkonen, but he passed him with all four wheels off the track on the last corner.
Well, we spoke earlier, a little bit of a shortcut.
Was a bit of a shortcut. I don't know whether he was trying rally driving or something, but if anybody's going to try something, it's going to be Max Verstappen. Obviously went up, and if you saw the images inside the waiting area before they went onto the podium, Verstappen was up in the area, and then they brought Raikkonen up because the stewards had given Verstappen a 5-second penalty for going off the track and gaining an advantage,
which put him in fourth place,
which then put him back into fourth place.
So here's your Christmas present. Let me take it away from you.
It's almost like a carrot. Let me take it away. And apparently Red Bull are fuming.
Yeah, I see Horner slams harsh Verstappen demotion.
Absolutely so. Fuming. You know what? I think the stewards made the right decision, and they're citing things like other people were going off the track and no one was penalized, and this was the last corner and it was for the podium. So, you know, you keep your nose clean when it comes to a critical place. But and Horner has to stand behind his driver, unfortunately. But Verstappen's also in trouble for calling the steward an idiot.
Oh, so he obviously was livid and opened his mouth.
He may get a fine. So it's interesting. But what's nice about Formula One this year is that the politics and the way in which they're presenting the races is real entertainment. And it's nice to watch. So it's no longer as boring as it was before, because there's pre-race politics, there's post-race politics, there's things going on behind the scenes that make you want to follow it on a regular basis.
Watching Grand Prix has become far more exciting.
I mean,
it's not just the race that, you know, switch on and they're at the starting line and go. You get all that preamble, and you really get to understand what's going on and the conversations with, you know, the people on the...
Well, they've got a whole lead up to the qualifying and the race 1 hour before.
Yeah.
And they apparently want to extend that to 3 days.
Oh, wow.
3 days of Formula One before the actual race. So I think they're going in the right direction. It's ever since Liberty bought Formula One. Yeah. So.
And they're obviously, you know, trying to make the sport more entertaining. And
which it should be.
Exactly.
You know, the sport's it's not about the drivers, it's about the fans.
Exactly, 100%. 100%. So that's and George, just quickly, in terms of, has Hamilton got it in the bag yet, or is he one race away?
It depends. So if he finishes ahead of Vettel in the next race, then he'll have it in the bag.
Absolutely fantastic. Well, there's your F1 recap from George and the team here. And what we're going to do now is we are going to get into our vehicle review. And I'm going to turn over to Chad and let him do his thing.
Hi, guys, and welcome to another review here on Auto Central. This time, Lawrence and myself are taking a look at the Renault Clio RS Trophy. Whew, what a car. Yeah, you did it on launcher. I had it on review, and we shot a little bit of a video on it, which we're going to chat about a little later on. But initial impressions, I mean, what's the RS about for you?
Like I said, what a car. Lightweight, lots of power, and overboost.
Yeah, and overboost, yeah. Just to give you a little bit of the numbers, it's a compact hatch, the Renault Clio, and this is the highest performance version that you can get, the Trophy. There are actually two RS models. There is the Lux, and there is the Trophy. And the Lux is the more powerful of the two. So it's got a 1.6-litre motor. It's a turbocharged four-cylinder motor. Makes 162 kilowatts.
Insane.
That's 100 kilowatts per litre. Now, the magic number used to always be 100 horsepower per litre. So this is hovering around 135, 140 horsepower per litre. And that's phenomenal. In a little front-wheel drive hatch, I mean, that's unheard of.
And when you put that kind of power into a front-wheel drive car, you would expect torque steer all over the place.
All over the place.
But I tell you what, on a mountain pass, nothing could catch this.
Yeah, I mean, it's got fantastic suspension, the electronic limited slip diff, the torque vectoring, everything. The amount of tech that they've plumbed into the suspension and drivetrain up front in this car is absolutely phenomenal. So it just handles like it's on rails. And absolute little hooligan machine.
It's a track car.
It is.
It even has onboard stuff in the computer system, which is designed for track use.
Lap counters, the RS monitor. Is the system that's in there, and as soon as you push the little checkered flag button, it just opens up a whole new world in the infotainment of
stuff to play with,
performance data, figures, readouts, G meters, settings, all that sort of stuff, even tips and tricks for helping you go fast in terms of
on the track,
how to corner, how to look after your vehicle, maintenance, what not to do, what to do, and really, really fascinating. So it makes 162 kilowatts, 260. Let me get that right. 260 newton meters. And the reason why I have to get it right is because of that overboost that you mentioned just now.
Yeah.
Which
pushed the accelerator just a little bit harder, and all of a sudden,
280.
There we go.
Newton meters.
An extra 20
newton meters. And it makes a little difference. It really does. Because, I mean, the thing is proper quick.
I wouldn't quite say it's like Honda's VTEC. But it's damn close.
No. Yeah, it's not VTEC where it's going to sit there and just suddenly rocket you away. I mean, it's already turbocharged, but it's definitely...
You do feel it, though. Once you surpass 160, it very rapidly approaches 200 before you know what you're doing.
You realize you're in overboost, and that is the result of it.
It's a very... I don't know what to put this. It's like a steep curve up to a certain speed, and then as soon as the overboost kicked in, the curve just gets even steeper. It's a very, very quick acceleration.
Rapid acceleration curve, yes. Yeah. So, I mean, they said that it's going to do 0 to 100 in 6.6 seconds.
I can attest to that.
Yeah, and I mean, it's believable, but that number doesn't seem that high, though. Or that good. Let me put it that way. When I say high, I mean in terms of good, in terms of quick. 6.6, you know... 2 litre Subaru hatches that are sitting with roughly the same power is getting
this out of a 1.6. Let's not forget the benchmark for all vehicles. The Clio held a record around the Nürburgring.
I know. It is. It's a proper enthusiast track orientated.
Now, I know I'm going on about the speed and the performance capabilities, but this car sounds.
Oh, yeah.
Amazing.
And that was the angle that we took on this one, because the Trophy over the Lux comes fitted standard with an Akrapovic stainless steel exhaust system. Like stainless steel?
Performance exhaust system,
yeah.
What they make it out of, whether it's carbon fiber or stainless steel,
Amazing. It's got the carbon fiber tips on the back, which look absolutely proper with Akrapovic branding and all that on it. But it really does. And, you know, you start it up and it's got very similar to the... It was the 595 Bath that we drove as well.
It has a bit of a rumbly bark.
Yeah, but you start it up and you also just hear the turbo spooling through it. And
it's an amazing piece of kit.
It really is. The one downside and the one bit that everybody's criticizing is the fact that you don't get this car with a manual gearbox, because it only comes with that 6-speed EDC gearbox, which is their efficient dual-clutch gearbox.
Flappy pedals.
Flappy pedals, dual-clutch, yeah.
I'm telling you, the car it does so well, and it's such a performance machine that a mere mortal could not eke the best performance out of that car with a manual gearbox.
Yeah. No, it isn't.
Dual-clutch system, it does all the thing for you, and you cannot change as fast as that thing.
No, you won't. So in terms of outright numbers and in terms of outright speed, yes, I get it. That's cool. It does that. But it doesn't. I did feel that it sort of robbed a little bit of the engagement and the driver sort of... involvement, the driver involvement out of it. You know, it's so easy to just pull up on a pedal, pull up on a pedal, or even just let it do its own thing.
But isn't that what Formula One is all about nowadays? Pull on the pedal, turn the push a switch.
Yeah, but I know. But us mere mortals, as you say, us mere mortals sit there and we want to, you know, throw the car around. A real enthusiastic driver is possibly going to look somewhere else for his kicks. He's going to go with a little Fiesta ST 200 or something of the sort.
End up backwards in the hedge.
Hey, maybe. Who knows? I mean, it's a little Fiesta. They handle pretty well. But we're running.
I can say this. I tried. There's no lift or forward steering in this car.
Yeah, they just are. But that was also with them again. You know, you can work with the chassis, but the amount of front end grip is absolutely phenomenal. Yeah. Now, we're running out of time here. We've got about a minute left on that. But we've got a video that's coming out. We did something very special because of those Acropovic pipes.
Yeah, we went tunnel hunting.
Now, unfortunately, in Joburg, we're a little stymied when it comes to hunting for tunnels and finding a nice long. We don't have Huguenot Tunnel that we can sit there and.
8 kilometers of. What do petrol heads love to do?
We love to hear our cars.
So you drive through a tunnel, what's the first thing you do? You wind it down, and you put it in neutral and start revving the hell out.
Drop two gears, give it a bit of a spurt.
And that is exactly what we went to go and do. And the few small tunnels that we found, we were able to get the RS to park quite a bit.
Quite nice.
It was lots of fun.
Is absolute epic fun, and I mean that's our video that's going to be coming out a little later on. Nothing, it doesn't dive too much into what the RS is about, but it gives you an idea of what it's like to own it and
as a fun car.
It's an enthusiast one. All right, so let's just get down to the brass tacks here. The RS 200 Lux retails for $380,000, but we had the trophy. And that comes in at a bit of a premium, $420,000. So it is a little bit of a pricey piece of kit when you consider that it is still just a Clio.
Pocket change.
Pocket change. But we really like it. And I think that Renault is making some fantastic. The Frenchies as a whole actually are making some really cracking cars. And we need to start dispelling the myth that French cars are not to be bought. All right, guys, that's our review. Thank you very much. And we're going to turn now back to Ty and the guys back in the studio. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Right, thanks, Chad. Absolutely fantastic review there. And George, let's get into our tech segment. And I see that the Dubai police are adding hover bikes to their police force. You know, we always know that the Dubai police are looking to take the next technological leap, and they've announced their intent to use hover bikes. It's a futuristic move, and it's in line with their developments across the local Dubai government, which is aggressively adopting expensive, unproven, but you know, sci-fi technologies to obviously combat crime. I don't think there shouldn't be too much crime in Dubai. I don't think they take a lot of nonsense over there. But hover bikes. I mean, it's 2017. We're talking about hover bikes in police forces.
You know what? If anybody's going to pull this off, it's going to be Dubai. But I think you've got a point there in that there's hardly any crime, and they're very, very hard on crime in Dubai. So if it's going to work anywhere first, it's going to be Dubai, because they're probably not going to have high speed chases.
Yeah. Well, they say they plan to use the hover bikes in emergency situations, given how quickly their batteries can drain. I don't know if that's a good thing then. The Scorpion 3s can only run for 25 minutes, and they're not exactly speed demons either, hitting 43 miles an hour, but they can hit that speed while flying 4 to 6 feet off the ground, high up enough to fly over traffic on a backed up highway. So I kind of understand where their thinking is there, and obviously we know that with battery life and stuff like that, you know, these technologies, the distance that these machines will travel will obviously get greater over time.
Yeah, so you know, the problem is battery technologies, and you know, at the moment the two biggest battery manufacturers are obviously Tesla in conjunction with Panasonic.
Yeah.
And we're still using lithium ion, which I don't think is going to go away. There is an abundant source of lithium ion in the earth. And it's you know, it's just a matter of trying to get more kilowatt hours out of the smallest possible battery. And that's the trouble. That's why this thing can only do 25 minutes of flying.
Yeah. But anyway, it's still great to see some, you know, innovation in the police forces. Then talking about Tesla has reached an agreement with Shanghai authorities that would make it the first foreign automaker to build its own plant in China, putting it in the driving seat in the world's biggest electric vehicle market. On the planet. So the Silicon Valley electric car maker wholly owned manufacturing facility will be built in Shanghai's free trade zone. And this is really, really exciting. Tesla, obviously, you know, they Elon's doing some really cool things. He's really out there busting it.
I think the fact that he's been allowed to do this, because China has some strict rules, is just evident of China leading the world when it comes to electric cars. And not in terms of the technology itself, but just in terms of the drive to get electric cars on the road and fossil fuels out.
Exactly, because I see China usually require foreign automakers to set up joint ventures with local Chinese partners, which involves obviously splitting profits and giving away some technology. That they also avoid import tariffs. So there's pluses and minuses to this, but makes sense for Tesla, as probably the leading electric vehicle manufacturer, to be playing in the biggest market.
Exactly.
There's a saying that you got to fish where the fish are.
But I think it will also drive the costs of the Tesla down because of the volumes that they could produce and sell to the local Chinese market.
Yeah, so I see that there is a statement just saying that any cars built by Tesla in the free trade zone would still incur a 25% import tariff. I don't know how that applies. If you're manufacturing locally, you're not really importing the car, but I know we have those. We still have import tariffs on our locally manufactured vehicles.
The laws can dictate anything, and that's just one of their criteria. It's really just a deterrent to stop people from siphoning profit out of the country. So the taxes mean that the profit stays inside the country, because effectively the manufacturing business itself, if it's a wholly owned subsidiary of, let's say, an American company, that means that that's actually American profit, effectively, and not Chinese profit. Yeah. Although taxes will be paid there, but the 25% then means that
China still get some,
China get a quarter of whatever Tesla make.
So essentially, the Chinese are saying, come and play in our market. Absolutely fantastic. You can apply your trade in our free trade zone, but we just want a small portion of that.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know how newsworthy this really is, because or how unique it is, because can anyone else do it?
I'd have to say no.
Maybe not, because they're still paying the taxes.
Exactly. I see that more than half a million new energy cars were sold in China last year, and the government is targeting sales in the millions in the coming years.
Brilliant.
So again, China driving electric vehicles. And then we were talking about batteries now, but just how expensive are hybrid and EV batteries in South Africa? And there was some research done not so long ago, and according to this research, the most expensive replacement battery pack in the sample of vehicles that were tested, this is in South Africa, is for the all-electric BMW i3 eDrive. The car costs the battery costs a whopping 339,616 rand, where the vehicle price is 606,000. So more than half of the cost of that vehicle is the battery.
Well, just to juxtapose that in terms of Tesla, the Model 3's battery cost $10,000.
And the sale of that car is
35,000. So it's a third, call it. It is possible to bring the cost of that battery down.
Yeah. I mean, to replace a Nissan Leaf electric battery is 130K. So, I mean, these batteries aren't, they're not cheap.
No,
aren't cheap. At 124,000, the third most expensive replacement battery pack in the study belongs to the Mercedes-Benz C350e.
Well, I suppose it's less about the battery in the car and more about the cost per kilowatt hour. At the moment, the cost per kilowatt hour of a battery is about $300. Elon Musk has vowed to bring that down to under $100 per kilowatt hour, which is a third of what it costs today.
Yeah.
I think they're probably somewhere in between that at the moment.
And that will happen naturally with scale, am I right?
Yes.
Well,
it's less about the scale and more about the actual cost of manufacture, and the techniques that go into making that battery and its sophisticated ways in which it generates its power. So over time that cost has to come down, but I think it's less to do with volume, more to do with the technology in the battery itself.
So
batteries are really simple. I watched something on the manufacturing of a lithium-ion battery the other day. It's a really, really simple concept. There are some proprietary things that they wouldn't show,
sure,
but it's a very simple concept.
Right, folks. Well, as you know, the Gran Turismo Sport was launched last week, and I was fortunate enough to get a copy of the game. And as you know, we're running a competition on autotrader.co.za just by following by signing up to our newsletter, that you can actually win a limited edition console as well as the game. And this is on behalf of the guys from PlayStation. That competition actually comes to a close today, but having received the game, not being a massive gamer myself, I've really been blown away by the level of the graphics and just how deep these guys have actually gone into this game in terms of the cars that you can drive, the tracks that you can ride, the time of day that you want to drive the car in. So this game is really, I'm really, really excited to get my hands onto the controls and get really, really stuck in. But the GT Sport really, really is a fantastic game, and I think it's a major evolution in racing. It's a real racing simulator, and I think Gran Turismo is really the ultimate driving experience. I'm fortunate enough today to be joined on the line by Selvan Govindo, who's the marketing director for Mercedes-Benz Passenger Cars. Selvan, how are you doing?
I'm great, Tyrone, and yourself?
Yes, good. Thanks very much for joining me on this call. Selvan, look, we all know that there's quite a big link with AMG and Gran Turismo, and we know that the AMG brand is synonymous with motorsport and performance, but it's also one of the key brands that are featured in the GT Sports game. So I just want to dig into that a little bit, and maybe you can just help unpack really, you know, some information to our listeners. Can you tell us a little bit about the heritage of the AMG brand, where it fits into Mercedes-Benz in the overall portfolio of things?
Absolutely. So AMG, or Mercedes-AMG as we call it in-house, is the performance division of Mercedes-Benz. You know, it's been around now for 50 years, and in these 50 years, it's been synonymous with motorsports. In fact, it's known mostly for its very sporty looks, that visceral growl that emanates from this car,
yes,
as well as the hair-blowing performance. You know, really powerful V8 engines defined by a philosophy called one man, one engine. Every engine is hand-built by one engineer.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, really a great heritage with this brand.
So driving performance, I mean, that's the slogan of the AMG brand, am I correct?
That's correct, yes.
And obviously, how does that AMG brand embody this in both like the vehicles that you guys produce and in the work that you do? I mean, we've obviously seen you guys at events like Festival of Motoring, and that AMG, you know, the AMG vehicles that you guys produce are absolutely phenomenal. And it was the first car I actually drove on the game. So I must say hats off to you guys. But I think, you know, we all know that AMG is synonymous with racing and with performance, both on the track and, you know, for now, outside of actually driving an AMG vehicle on a track, what is the best way for a consumer to actually, you know, get their hands onto, one of these cars?
Yeah, Tyrone, I think you said it, eh? You know, Mercedes-AMG for us in the brand, it stands for more than just performance. It's about design and it's about dynamism. And it is the brand that we use to really put a smile on everyone's face. You know, we have this amazing vehicle, and we try and get as many people to experience this at all the various platforms. You mentioned the Festival of Motoring. But we've also got a platform called the Advanced Driving Academy, which provides the experiences for customers, teaches them how to really handle a car with this levels of performance. You know, some of these cars produce 430 kilowatts of power. So, you know, we really want to be as well good corporate citizens and train people on the use of these vehicles. But it's guaranteed to leave anybody that sits in it a definite smile on their face that'll take many hours to wipe off.
Well, I can tell you now, playing the game and having driven one of the AMG vehicles, you know, just the sound from the game. I mean, I've never had the opportunity to actually get behind a real steering wheel of one of these cars, but I know that you guys do have these advanced driving courses, and I think we've got something exciting that we're going to announce a little bit later on in this interview. But tell me, your guys' relationship with Sony? I mean, you guys have had a long-standing relationship with them, and obviously, you know, you profile your vehicles in their games. What's the thinking behind that from the brand's point of view?
Yeah, we've had a really extensive relationship globally with Sony. And, you know, for us, it's really exciting that we were able to expose this iconic brand to their audience. You know, esports, as you know, is one of the fastest growing sports in the world, expected to reach a turnover of over $1 billion by next year. There's also some movement to try and get it included as an Olympic sport. So really a platform that's growing phenomenally, as is the AMG brand, growing over 30% per annum over the last few years, a model range with over 30 vehicles in it already. But the ability to allow gamers to virtually drive these cars on the best tracks around the world. I mean, you cannot go past this. It's an ideal opportunity for us.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, having, like I said again, and I allude to the fact, and this game has kind of excited me. It was one of the first driving games I ever played back in the day when they launched their first edition. And I see that you guys, the AMG GTS, is the cover star of the latest edition of the GT Sport game. That's fantastic. I mean, there's a host of phenomenal vehicles in the game, but for you guys to be on the cover really puts you out there, and I think it speaks volumes for the brand that that Mercedes-Benz and AMG is.
Absolutely. You know, this is the third cover that we've had, starting off with the iconic SLS a few years ago, the one with the gullwing doors, and then that was followed by a car specially designed for GT, which was the Gran Turismo. And now finally the AMG GTS, which is actually the successor to the SLS AMG, a vehicle that's been built from the ground up by the team at AMG, a true racer's car, perfect mid-engine mounting, really amazing road holding. I describe it best as a bullet. You point it and it goes there. Incredible speed.
Absolutely. Fantastic car to drive. I mean, and like I said again, you know, we've seen these vehicles around the track at motoring events that you guys attend. Salvin, are you much of a gamer yourself?
Yeah, I'm a gamer like I'm a golfer whenever I get a chance. So I've still got a PS3 in my bedroom, I must be honest.
Okay.
And I love racing games. So I think because of this GT, I'm actually going to upgrade to PS4 and look out for PS7, absolutely.
Well, maybe you should enter the competition on autotrader.co.za. All you got to do is sign up to our newsletter, and who knows, maybe you could get that new limited edition console, eh?
If only it was open to family and friends.
No, well, listen, I'm sure that we've got many listeners and readers, obviously, of our site, who are gamers. Outside of gaming, and you alluded to this just now, where else can one get up close and personal with the AMG brand in South Africa? And I think if you can just unpack kind of what your driving experiences, the dynamic skid and the track training, what would a user get by going, besides driving your phenomenal vehicles, get out of a day at the AMG driving experience?
Yeah, well, Taran, firstly, we have, South Africa's blessed. We've got 5 AMG performance centers around the country. Actually, 2 of them in the Johannesburg area, Sandton and Bedford View, 1 in Pretoria, 1 in Durban, and 1 in Cape Town. And these are the first point of contact for customers. It's an opportunity to really touch and feel the vehicle and also do a test drive if they want to. In fact, these performance centers are celebrating a unique AMG event from the 10th to the 12th of November. An ideal opportunity for any listener that wants to attend and get really close to the vehicles.
So you don't have
you don't
have to be an owner of a Mercedes-Benz to come down. Anybody can come down to the track day?
Absolutely. The more the merrier, and the more people buying cars, we love that.
Absolutely. Well, that's why we're in business, hey?
Absolutely. And then the second phase is that if you buy an AMG, whether it's an entry-level AMG, because we've launched a new range of AMGs called the 43. These are V6-powered AMGs, and they're our entry into the performance segment. Or you buy a 45 engine, which is also one-man, one-engine, the hand-built engines. These power the cars such as the A-Class, the CLA, and the GLA. Or you buy the 63 or the 65 AMG, you get a voucher, and this voucher entitles you to spend a day with us at the Advanced Driving Academy, which is based out at the racetrack in Pretoria. And here the program allows you to handle the car in every different situation, preparing you for high-speed driving when you need it, but also preparing you for defensive driving when you need it. You know, you have time on the skid pan, like you said. If we switch off all the controls and you are the only force that's able to control this vehicle, how would you handle this in very slippery condition? How would you handle the vehicles at high-speed driving?
Yeah.
How would you understanding braking distances, etc.? So you go through the entire ambit of understanding the performance of a true sports car.
So actually you get to drive really, really hot cars and you leave a better driver at the end of the day as well.
It's all in one. Yeah, absolutely. Only a Mercedes-Benz experience.
Exactly. Fantastic. Well, listen, I mean, you know, just to the listeners out there, if you can't make it down to the weekend's events on the 10th, you said the 10th and 12th of November?
10th till the 12th of November. That's
fantastic.
Great.
If someone can't get down there, I believe that you're also here with us, you know, on this interview today to help us launch an amazing competition prize that you have for our listeners and readers in association with PlayStation and GT Sport, which will enable one lucky winner to experience the AMG brand close up and personal on the track. Salvin, I don't know if you want to, you can let our listeners know what we're giving away here today just by signing up to the Auto Trader newsletter. Sorry, the competition actually kicks off tomorrow, the 1st of November. So do you want to tell us what you guys are giving away?
Yeah, we're actually giving away a ticket to attend one of these Driving Academy courses. It's specially designed for your listeners. It will allow them to experience all of the amazing products from AMG, from the A45 all the way to the AMG GTR, which is a road-going version of one of the most amazing sports cars available at the moment, as well as the GTS, which is featured in the GT7 game.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
I mean, that's absolutely amazing. What a fantastic prize. I mean, we're really excited to be associated with you guys, and we just want to say thank you very much for putting an awesome prize up like this to our listeners. And to enter, all our listeners have to do is log on to autotrader.co.za, sign up to the newsletter. All the terms and conditions are there. And who knows, you might be, you know, busting it around one of the tracks in one of these fancy AMG vehicles. So, Salvin, what did you want to say there?
Now that you said it perfectly, eh? You know, you can only win it if you're in it. So I urge everybody to get logging on.
100%. Well, Salvin, thank you so much for joining me today. I really do appreciate it. And we look forward to experiencing this day out on the track with our winner. And I'm sure we'll be in touch soon.
Thank you, Tyrone. Awesome.
Have a great day. Cheers, eh?
Cheers.
Bye-bye.
And again, another fantastic show. George, thanks very much for being in studio.
Cool time.
And we'll catch you guys in 2 weeks and keep it safe on the roads. Buckle up. Don't talk on your phone and have a good week, everybody. Cheers.
This is CliffCentral.com.